This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. Is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Hey, this is Sam Darnold, and the Michael K. Show starts right now. Have a good show, boys.
And thank you, Sam, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday, December 7th, 2020. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, all apart and together, though, for the next 4 hours, the other 20, they are your responsibility. Giants with a thrilling victory in Seattle. The Jets with a gut-wrenching loss at the Meadowlands. And that's how we will start out with the Gangrene Report, brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. We will not give short shrift to the Giants and their amazing win and what they've done with four straight victories to take a stranglehold on the NFC least. But the bottom line is what the Jets did yesterday, it's hard to do. It's hard to do. ESPN Stats and Info said that in that very same situation over a certain amount of years, no one has ever run that defense in that situation.
Yeah, since
Greg Williams decided to do it.
Like something like 280 situations since 2006. Zero teams ran cover zero. Zero.
Now, cover zero, for those that don't know, is that you don't have any extra men back. So you just have the three people in your secondary covering the three wide receivers. And one of the kids was an undrafted free agent, Lamar Jackson, who allowed the wide receiver to get behind him and salvage really the season for the Las Vegas Raiders. I will tell you this. The one thing that, and you all know by now, Greg Williams has been fired. But the thing that made me laugh on Twitter is that he called that defense because the Jets are tanking. Come on, everybody, wake up. Why? He wasn't going to be here anyway. Why would he be a part of it? Why would he ruin his reputation? He did it because he's a gambler. He did it for the same reason that Ron Rivera went for the two-point conversion when he should have gone for the extra point and forced overtime, because that's what he does. That's what Greg Williams does. How ridiculous and asinine would it be for a defensive coordinator who has no chance of being here next year to actually throw the game, to tank? Why? Well, it makes no sense.
Well, why would you put yourself in a situation? Why did you defend the fourth and three with a minute and a half to go? Like, they could have just given up the touchdown there. They did have a couple of weird defensive penalties that kept the drive alive. But then why come up with a stop there? Why come back after you fell behind when Darnold has the three consecutive turnovers? Like, if you were going to tank to lose that game, you could have done it earlier and not put yourself in a situation where the Raiders had to complete a pass with 5 seconds to go to win the game.
The only way that anybody would tank, the only way would be if the person is tanking is Adam Gase and he's been assured that he's coming back. That's it. That's the only person, the defensive coordinator, the offensive coordinator, the players, none of them are tanking. The only one that would tank would be the coach if he wants Trevor Lawrence and has been told that he will come back. But there's no way in hell that the defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, with his reputation at stake, would blow a game on purpose. People, you got to stop. It works out for the Jets because they get the number one pick in all likelihood. But, Peter, there's no way they tanked on purpose.
I understand, but what I will not let you do is think people are crazy for having that thought.
If they are.
No, they're not. The reason they're not crazy for having that thought is, Michael, is because it was such an insanely awful play.
But that's what he does. They have the 30th ranked defense.
I know, but
that's what he does.
But you got to give people the right to try to figure out what the logic could be.
Okay, and so then why was he fired then? If he did they wanted him to do, why was he fired today?
I think at this point you'd have to say it's over, and that he was not doing that to try to get Trevor Lawrence. He's just a terrible football coach. But up until his firing, I understand why people would think that. It was a crazy play call. Crazy.
No, I,
bad enough.
Listen,
bad
it's a crazy play call, but he couldn't be doing it to Tank when he wouldn't be here.
But
he's not
going
to be here.
But not everybody knows what's going to happen. All you're doing is watching a game and seeing a rookie get put on an island against an incredibly fast wide receiver, which we know. We talked about this. Michael, you brought it up last week when we had James Bradberry on the show. Basically, an impossible situation for a defensive back and in this version of football that we're in right now. You have almost no shot to be able to play that cleanly. And to be put in that spot, I get why anything would be on the table for Jets fans. It was such an insane play.
I don't think that's on the table. And we find out, you know, Gase just had his press conference. He said that the decision was totally his.
Right.
He conferred with the GM. He conferred with the owner. And they decided that Greg Williams had to go.
Yeah, and I mentioned that in the tease, and it, you know, we just confirmed. I think it was important to know who fired Williams. Because if it was Joe Douglas, well, then that bodes well that Joe Douglas is going to have a major say in who stays and who goes when the season is over. Right? Because remember, they wanted Greg Williams. They were hot for Greg Williams. There were rumors that the reason why Matt Rhule did not become coach of this team was because they wanted Williams to be the defensive coordinator, and they wanted to choose that position and not let Rhule do it. So the Jets wanted Williams. So I thought it was important to see who fired him because, Michael, if Gase did fire him, does he feel like comfortable? Like, I'm still making decisions here. I still plan on being here. You know, if Chris Johnson made the decision, well, then it could be easy to see him making the decision to eventually let Gase go. If Joe Douglas made the decision, then it's easy to see at the end of the season that Joe Douglas can let the head coach go. I still worry that that Adam Gase still has the power of making decisions, and one of those decisions might be making himself stay.
Well,
as the
I
coach.
Think that the Jets had to do this. Because if they didn't, then these insane theories that they're tanking would continue. So once they fire the coach, that pretty much tells you he wasn't part of any tanking
right.
thing. He was just inept.
Well, the thing, Michael, is that if tanking is on the table, then Adam Gase is coming back. Because why would any coach put their reputation on the line, as you said, to make boneheaded decisions to eventually lose their job anyway? Right? So if people think the Jets are tanking, then that means Adam Gase is coming back. Now, Gase has always had a problem with Williams, and maybe that's one of the reasons why that he was just itching to let him go. But I think that was a fireable offense yesterday. And if he did it on purpose, then there's no reason to believe he would be fired the next day. Because now all Greg Williams is going to be remembered for is Bounty Gate and this. Right? So why would he want to put his reputation on the line to help out a team that's going to fire him less than 24 hours later?
Now, we're going to have Sam Darnold on later. Sam played better in the second half, but you know, there's that stretch where three straight possessions, fumble, interception, and fumble, that didn't bode well for him. Their running game was actually the best running game they've had in the 2 years under Gase. I thought that Sam was a little bit better, but he certainly wasn't good enough. He had a lead, though, and they should have won that game, and they didn't win the game. So that's just an awful game, but a good game for the Jets because – you know, I don't think the Jaguars are winning either. The Jaguars are more convincing the way they lose. At least they force overtime. They get the last possession. It looks like they're trying to win. I don't think they're going to win. If the Jets lose a game, they're going to lose Trevor Lawrence.
I don't know.
Or
it's
if they win a game.
It's interesting because eventually Jacksonville is going to figure this out and win, right? Because as you said, you can't say they're tanking because they got the two-point conversion, forced overtime. They fought hard against, you know, Minnesota's not good, but still, the game's in Minnesota. So they might run into a win, but at this point, it's not going to matter. The Jets aren't going to win another game. They're at Seattle, at the Rams, home against Cleveland, and then New England. So where are they winning? 0-16 is pretty much, I would think, assured at this point.
You would right? think. You would think. And the funny part is the reason that they were able to even mount any kind of game against them is because they had a running game. And the only reason they had a running game is Frank Gore got a concussion on the second play of the game.
Exactly.
Otherwise, he's still going to play a 38-year-old running back.
Right.
Instead, he gave two young guys a chance. And you know what? They did a good job. Johnson actually had the first 100-yard rushing game under Gase as a Jet.
And
why
Mims
are you running Frank Gore the whole time?
And Mims is a stud. That kid's going to be very, very good, if he's not very, very good already.
Would you say we also, though, while we're pointing out the rookies, did Becton have his worst moment as a Jet?
Yeah, it wasn't good. Not what you want.
I mean, he's kind of say at least
he
responsible.
Led to those two strip sacks.
Yeah, both strip sacks were on Becton, right?
Yep.
Not
the first two of the first two sacks he allowed all year. He's been great.
But yeah,
he got figured out yesterday. That's for sure.
All right, now we certainly don't want to just stay on the negative. The Jets. Let's move to the positive. The Giants. That's the Gangreen Report, brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit Two by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. How about them Giants? I mean, that's a pretty impressive win in every sense of the word. You did it with a backup quarterback who was there not to make any mistakes, and he didn't. The only interception he threw was slippery-fingered Evan Engram let one go off his hands, and it was picked off. Otherwise, he took care of the football. The Giant running game took care of the rest. Wayne Gallman had the best game of his life.
Yep.
And the defense was the star of that show. I mean, they sacked Russell Wilson five times, and they consistently pressured him. They didn't let him do what he wanted to do. That's a very potent offense. They slowed down Metcalf. That's a great performance by the Giants. I was distressed by the way they played against the Bengals. A game they should have beaten, a team they should have beaten up. They didn't. All their wins, even the wins against Washington, were all nail biters. This was a legitimate football victory on every sense of the word. The only thing that didn't go well, usually goes well for them, is their special teams, and they were actually able to overcome that. Bottom line, a great win for the Giants and a great day for Dave Gettleman. I mean, Leonard Williams turned into a legitimate player.
He ended the game yesterday. I mean, really, he sealed things.
2.5 sacks. He's got 8 on the season. That's a career high. Blake Martinez played like an animal till he hurt his lower back. Bradbury slowed down Metcalf. Those are all Gettleman. And then some high draft pick or low draft picks that he had, Don. They also, like Coughlin picked up the pace as well. I think he's a 7th rounder.
Yeah,
all of a sudden, Gettleman's melange that looks so ugly doesn't look so ugly anymore, so we got to back off a little bit. He might return.
Don, yeah. I got to ask you a question, too. Tell me this. How many times during the Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson era have we seen them look that solved by a defense? I mean, they really, throughout the game, they just didn't look like the Russell Wilson Seahawks. They really had control of that team.
They play ferocious. The pressure, as Michael said, not just the sacks, but rolling Wilson out. And sometimes he was able to buy enough time to find some guys open. But for the most part, they forced him into a couple of turnovers and where he had to throw the ball away. Seattle had moments in that fourth quarter where they could have very easily come back and won that game. The Giants opened the door for them, and they did get a touchdown. But you held, you know, a great quarterback, probably the third best quarterback in the league right now, into just 12 points in their own building. You survived the block punt, which they were really lucky it wasn't a touchdown, but, you know, that 5-0, you're shut out in the first half, and yet you're still in the game. And give Colt McCoy some credit, too. He wasn't great, but when he needed to, I thought that last possession the Giants had, getting a couple of first downs, taking some of the time off the clock, they were actually aggressive on that final third down incompletion, where you could have understood if they just ran the ball and forced Seattle to use their second timeout, but they didn't. They went for it to try to keep the drive alive. So they did enough there to be able to hold on to the football. As you said, Gallman ran tremendously. I thought that was a turning point, that 60-yard run out of nowhere and just staying consistent.
How about Alfred Morris?
Yeah, Morris was great too. And I thought the play for the screen pass on the touchdown and getting the 3 points off the turnover at the end of the game, which ended up being huge. So Seattle needed a touchdown, not a field goal on that final possession. I mean, what can you say? I mean, honestly, for a backup quarterback to go to Seattle and win a game they weren't expected to win, now everything has changed. 4 straight wins, holding the opponent to under 21 in all 4 of them. And now put yourself in a position now where 7 wins is certainly on the table, which would then force Washington to have to get 8. I mean, this is their division to lose now.
It really is. It really is. And it showed the way they played yesterday, Don. It was like this team, whether it's Daniel Jones or Colt McCoy, they are not a great team yet. But they are a team that if they don't make major mistakes, can beat a lot of teams in this league. That's really what Colt did. He was not good yesterday, though he had a couple of key completions late in the game. He really just kind of reminded me of kind of what has made Jones great the last few weeks, not making the killer mistakes.
Peter, can you, I know it's hard to give me credit, but I had Joe Judge going to Canton, and it looks like it was right.
Listen, I was wrong. I'll say that. No, you're not right about Canton yet. Sorry. I can't do that, actually.
But
what I can say is I was wrong in the way I jumped him early on, thinking he was just Mr. Joe Football. Ugh. He is much more than that. He is a guy with personality who inspires these players. When we talked to Bradberry on Friday, you could tell he's a guy who's liked and who, as he pointed out, really has both sides. He does have this tough Belichickian coach thing, but he also is a really likable players coach. Fine, I'll give you some credit. He might be special.
And I think a lot of football is seeing that as well. I mean, this Giant team is not overly talented, but give credit to their coordinators and give credit to Judge for changing a culture. Imagine being 1-7 and then reeling off the next four. Now, this is not like what the Jets did last year. The Jets were out of it. Those were nothing games against bad teams. The Giants just beat an exceptional team. And by the way, wasn't it just yesterday where Russell Wilson was definitely going to win the MVP? It's not even in discussion now. Now it's Mahomes or Rodgers. Russell Wilson might not get a vote again. And the Giants shut down that guy that everybody thought was going to win the MVP after the first 6 weeks of the year. Great job by the Giants. They wanted to play important games in September. They're playing mega important games in December. And if you really want to let yourself dream, dream this way. If they get into the playoffs, who wants to come to MetLife Stadium and play the Giants in the first round? Who? What team? You think Seattle wants to again?
I was going to say, couldn't they end up hosting Seattle?
Right now, if the season ended today, a phrase I hate, it would be Seattle.
They could, or the Rams. It depends on how things go.
But Rams, they play tough. They lost by 8 points. They had a chance right down to the end.
Hey, listen, now you go back. And I said this at the beginning of the season because I was thinking this was all going to bear fruit next year, like learning how to win. You know, the loss against the Bears, the loss against the Rams, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Buccaneers. So many games in which they could have won the game and didn't because of one misplay here, one bad penalty there, one misstep here. And I thought, all right, eventually you're going to learn from that and you'll be that much better next year. Well, no. They're now that much better right now. They've learned from now. They're winning those games. I know it's only Cincinnati, but what happened? Cincinnati gets the ball with a chance to win the game. Giants get the strip sack and they hold on to the victory. Russell Wilson's got Seattle in a position with the ball and a couple of timeouts to maybe get that miracle touchdown the way the Eagles did earlier in the season. What did the Giants do? Well, Seattle doesn't even come close to getting that score. So now games that they were losing early in the year, now they're starting to win. So the record's still relevant because that's what you go by. This is not a 5-7 team. You know, this is a much better team than 5-7, and they're playing like it. Now, you got to continue because, you know, before we start awarding the division to them, you got to now I think you got to beat Arizona, right? Cardinals aren't as good as Seattle. The game's in your building, all right? So now you look at Arizona differently. You look at Cleveland differently. You look at Baltimore differently. So now, you know, you don't settle for a 6-10, 7-9. Maybe you try to go for 8-8. But right now, this is their division to lose, and they've got to take advantage of it now.
How about some props, though, for Peter Rosenberg? Got his three-pointer, got his two-pointer. Don and I embarrassed on our three-pointer.
Somehow it ended up being interesting.
Well, it did end up being interesting.
Turnover is a killer, but they got the ball, you know, with a shot to still win the game. But, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Titans couldn't catch a cold in that game. They couldn't do anything. That was disgraceful.
Well, big game for me tonight. My one pointer for Washington is big today.
And Don and I have different sides of a game.
Yep, that could be a big deal.
The Monday night game.
I've got a game coming up with. I got Buffalo, and you've got San Francisco. So
Don, I'm rooting for Buffalo because Michael can get up to 44 points, whereas if you win, you're tied with him at 43.
Right.
Well, you really figured it all out, haven't you?
I'm rooting for Don. But I will tell you, Andrew's the real disgrace. He pulled me aside. He called me to task for my Jets pick the other day. When we went to commercial, went, really, Peter? Jets?
Well, Peter was so on point on Friday that he actually told me he loved my Rams pick, and he was right.
No, you guys don't understand. So, I do my picks thing. I do like a stupid picks pool. I'm in third to last place in this whole thing. I have been off every week on everything. I'm in first place in picks this week. I have 15 points so far. I got two games wrong all day yesterday with spreads. I saw everything yesterday. Yeah. Everything was clear. Don's New England pick, I loved. Loved the Rams. Knew Kansas City wouldn't cover. Loved Detroit against Chicago. Everything was clear. I could have become a millionaire yesterday.
Yeah, but you didn't. Well, you're a millionaire in your own right. You've earned it.
And I'll tell you what, I am very – tonight's Washington game just got very interesting because of the Giants, too. That is a lot of pressure now. Washington loses – They might have to win out to get past the Giants.
Well, here's the question. Do you think the Giants can get to 7 wins? The 7 wins would require them to win one of the next 3 home against Dallas.
If they don't get to 7 wins, it's a colossal failure.
I agree. Because then that means you went from winning 4 straight to then losing, you know, 3 of 4 down the stretch. But if they can get one of the next 3 and beat Dallas, then they'd get to 7, which means Washington would have to win out if they lose today.
We just caught such a big break. I mean, unfortunately, the first 22 minutes of the show, not on Yes. But now Yes has joined us, so they can see the brilliance and hear the brilliance.
And you know what's really good news for?
What?
It's good news for you, because they've been showing old center stages, some of which, your looks in some of them, in a word, troubling.
What do you mean? Weight?
Yes. There was
Tough eras. Some tough era K. There's a good new one they just showed. Larry David, good. Your Coach K. When was Coach K?
Probably 2010, maybe.
Yeah, trouble in a word.
And then there was Patrick Ewing.
Oh,
that wasn't bad.
And then there
Chris Mullin was kind of chunky.
PJ Carlissimo.
You know what? I could take it if you two were oil paintings. You're not exactly beautiful either, right?
I didn't say it. I'm trying to give you the timeline so you can think to yourself what years they were. I didn't say
it. I understand the timeline. I understand the battles I've had with weight. I get it. So now that I've lost weight, people are tweeting me. Like I tweeted out the Booyah t-shirt.
Yeah.
Right? And people are going, wow, Kay really looks sick. He looks really thin. It looks like he's really ill. I hope he's okay. So you can't win. You can't win.
So don't
try. That's just a bad job out of people. First of all, anyone who knows you well knows your goal is to look gaunt and sick.
When I see a chubby Michael, I see a happy Michael.
Oh, so happy. You're so right. You know me better than most.
You don't look sick in that picture. I mean, the shirt is a little young, but it was young on me, too.
It was tight.
Did they send you an XL or an L?
You know, it must have been an L because it was tight. Well, and then I thought they would make my arms look like really, you know, like WWE-ish.
Like the gun show.
No.
But they said it made me look sickly.
That's sad.
Not what you want. So we have a lot of stuff to do. We have Greg Williams coming on at 4 o'clock, so that's going to be fun to get his take.
Yeah, right.
Made that up. Wouldn't it be great, though? Because you know Greg Williams would go scorched earth. He would take out the napalm and just everybody would go. Gay stinks. Johnson doesn't know what he's doing. Douglas is the worst. I mean, he would.
But also, at some point, we need to spend a moment showing love to Marcus May. I was thrilled to hear a player finally on this team say something that needed to be said.
You think Sam will?
Even now, with Williams fired, the question is, Sam is so nice. Will Sam say that wasn't the right play call, or will he still blame himself?
He tore him apart. You know, he was asked about the play call after the game. He goes, it is what it is.
That's as much heat as you get from Sammy.
I despise that phrase. That is so biting to me, a phrase like that. When somebody says that to me, you know they're disappointed. You know that you probably dropped the ball in some way. Like if somebody asks you for something, you say, sorry, couldn't do it. Ah, you know, it is what it is. I'm like, oh.
You know what, Don?
I hate that.
I can guarantee you that yesterday on the phone, I might have uttered that phrase 6 times.
I could see that.
Yeah, it is what it is. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. All right, settle in, shower off early, towel off. We got a lot to talk about. Got a lot to dissect. Lot. I think you're going to enjoy this show. I think you're going to delight in it. Sam Darnold later, Steve Young later, Kay LaGreco-Rosenberg now with you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Peter, tell me who this is.
I just need your love. Don't get me wrong, a shiny new Mercedes would look nice in my driveway.
Huh. Have any idea, Peter? Here's a real hit. We're going to pay for it after this.
There's only one thing that I want. Maybe it's hard to find, and it's already mine.
I don't know.
Kacey Musgraves from her Christmas special last year. Ribbons and Bows.
I wouldn't have guessed.
Great song.
If you gave me 1,000 choices.
Do you know who Kacey Musgraves is?
I do, but couldn't pick Kacey Musgraves out of a lineup or visually, auditorily.
Why?
I just am not familiar.
I'm not familiar with her work.
Oh, the Christmas special is so great. Like the elf that's like narrating it from last year.
Oh, there's a good elf?
Daniel Levy.
And you love Daniel Levy.
This is before I even knew what Daniel Levy was all about.
But now you're a huge Levy guy.
Huge. I'd like to hang with him. I'd like to be his buddy.
I am about halfway through, maybe a little more than halfway through The Queen's Gambit.
Love it, right?
Very, very good. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, so far, I would say I love it and think it's great and think the lead character is
phenomenal,
potentially iconic character. But I am a little confused, unless something changes over the last 3 episodes, as to why it's described as like the single greatest thing ever made.
See, that's the problem with you. When people rave about it, you expect Casablanca.
You're the biggest culprit.
All right, you're going to love it. The final 3 episodes, you'll love it.
I really enjoy it. So far, it's been great.
I have another one that you'll love that Jody and I started this weekend.
Okay.
And I think you might like it too, Don. The Flight Attendant.
Oh, I want to watch that.
Is it good?
It is good.
And Kaylee Cuoco is amazing in it. She's not Penny in this, I'll tell you that, Don.
No?
No, she's not Penny.
It's like a sort of dark comedy mystery?
Yeah, sort of like that.
Yeah, I thought that looked really good. I watched the Euphoria. Euphoria did like a sort of tie it together mini special yesterday.
Right.
Like I think there's releasing a second one too. And I thought of you, Michael, because you would have thought of it as a ripoff. Because while it was an entertaining episode, they basically had a scene where Zendaya, the starring character, her and her sponsor just have a hour-long conversation in a diner. That's the entire episode.
Oh boy.
I just sort of thought, isn't this sort of obviously what they're doing because they weren't able to do a full episode during COVID?
It's kind of like a dinner with Andre. You ever seen
it? A dinner with Andre.
Yeah.
Now, what a great way to start our phone calls than with the great, I think Peter's going to agree, Tessa in West Coast.
Oh, Tessa's strong.
Hello, guys.
How you doing?
I'm so sorry. I'm here, guys. I'm ready. I'm feeling good. The knee's feeling good. Listen, I just want to ask one question really quick.
What's that?
How come the station isn't Giants and Jets? How come y'all station is just, this is the home of the Jets? How come we can't get part of y'all? I just want to really know.
No, because we carry the Jets games. We don't carry the Giant games, but we talk Giants as much as Jets.
I know, but I'm a little salty with it, but I understand. Okay, so let's get back. Let's just get into the game from the rip. Listen, Don, I just feel like people just have to give us this. I'm not going crazy like, oh, we went into championships. But you know what? Defense win championships, but look like our defense is going to help us win this division. That's all I'm saying. One game at a time. Our defense shut them down. Metcalf couldn't even take his passy out of his mouth and celebrate yesterday. It had to stay right up in his mouth because we were shutting him down. Yeah, he got 80 yards. Yeah, he got a couple throws. But it was crazy. They looked so confused. Russell, they could not do in-game adjustments for nothing. It's like our defense is so good. And you know what? Even though we forced straight in, we was going against losing teams, so I feel like we wasn't getting credit. But no, we just went into the Legion of Boom. They're not as much Boom, but they still all right. But we just went into the Legion of Boom and with a backup quarterback, y'all, a backup quarterback who didn't start this. Your team, D Peter with Washington last year, and we just beat them. And I feel like the defense didn't just do enough. They did more than enough to show that they are right. top 10. Can I ask that question?
Well, no, listen, forget the statistics. Forget the statistics, because the statistics are going to tell you one story, because it's going to include all the games. But right now, the way this team is playing, at the right time, we're talking, it's December.
Yes.
And all I heard over the last couple of weeks, who you beat? All right, you beat Washington, you always beat Washington. You beat Philadelphia, they stink. You beat Cincinnati, they stink. They had a backup quarterback in the game, Allen.
Yep.
You can't apologize for this loss, for this win. This is legit. This is a win in Seattle against the Seahawks, who are one of the best teams in the NFL. So anybody can't throw back in your face, you're under 500. Oh, anybody can win this division. They went out, beat Seattle. Now, Washington's got a chance today at 5 o'clock, because Peter, that would be a legit win if they beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. Yeah. But right now, Dallas doesn't have a win on their resume like this. Philadelphia, Washington, none of those teams have a win like this on their resume. This is the best team in the division right now. It's their division to win, period.
And we just looking so positive. Like, our arrow is pointing so far up what we're building, the culture. You can tell they enjoy playing with each other. The way the defense was rolling yesterday, I mean, like, we was like drop kicking them. Like, I'm just like, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, like Jabril Peppers cutting through the middle, knocking Carson down, sacking Russell. It's like, that's what we need. And then Colt was doing exactly what he was supposed to do. Dinking and dunking, little slash plays across the middle every now and then, going to the outside. He was doing exactly what he was supposed to do. Of course, Evan Engram, I don't know whose fault that was when the ball went through his hands. I don't know, but I don't care. All I know is we was doing what we were supposed to do, and you're right, why not us? Why can't we beat Cardinals? They looking a little scary right now, a little sus. Why can't we beat them on Sunday? I definitely think we can get to 7. I'm not going to get crazy with 8-8, but I definitely think we can get to 7. Seattle won their division 7-9. Why not us? All I know is that the way we're playing, with the heart, the desire, passion to continue to keep getting better, we're learning. And then next year, don't forget, we're getting linebackers back. Remember, we lost 2 major linebackers this year or whatever like that. We lost Carter. We lost the first round draft that we Don, what's his name with the O? O'Shine? I forgot his name, but we're getting him. Yeah, remember he got
Zimenez, I think.
We're getting him back. Like, our defense is going to be monstrous these next couple of seasons. Like, it's going to be crazy. We're going to be known for defense again.
Now, one thing that I'd like to know, and thank you for the phone call, Tessa, do we know anything about Blake Martinez yet? Because he couldn't play at the end of the game.
I mean,
have we had any kind of
I'll search
information?
I'm sure Judge talked today, so we'll try to get an update on that. Because that could be big, sure.
Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, were you happy when they lost?
No, you know what? I can't root for them to lose, but I understand what the big picture is. You know, it's better off that they did, but I would have preferred to lose, you know, 40-13 or 35-10, and to lose the way they lost. I mean, that was just gut wrenching, and you know, it's just amazing. 0-12 every week. It's another story with them. Greg Williams today absolutely should have been fired. I don't care what Gay says. I believe it came from the top, from Chris Johnson. You heard what the players, they spoke out, and Petey brought up a good point. You know what Sam's going to say to you guys when you ask him? He's going to say, well, it could have been on me, because if I got a first down, I wouldn't have put the defense in that position. Right. So I think Sam will take a little bit of the
probably. Break,
but yeah, that's the way he is. But, you know, the bottom line here is it's looking like it's going to be 0-16. It's just it felt it. You just wouldn't believe it. But it's just incredible. And, you know, what could I say? I just hope that, you know, when Woody comes back and he sits down with his brother, that they make the right decisions and they let Joe Douglas do what he needs to do, because they're at the bottom right now. You have to feel positive, because it's not going to get any worse. They only could get better from this point. And yesterday was the first start, and with today getting rid of Greg Williams. I don't like to call for people's job, but I'm sure most of the staff will be gone in a couple of weeks. And
that was a mistake of arrogance, and that's a fireable offense. Because there was no strategic way to do that other than the bravado of this is the way I do play defense. That was an ignorant thing for him to do. And he put his team, you can root for them to lose all you want. Those players were crestfallen yesterday. They don't want to go 0-16. And I wish there was a player on that team, Ira, that was veteran enough, that was on the field, and maybe May should have, when he heard that call, said, we're not doing that. We're not doing it. I'm sorry. throw me off the, I am not, because I'll just say after the game. May killed him after the game anyway. So should he have just went in that huddle and said, we're not running it. We're not running zero coverage. We're not doing it.
You know, the thing that worries me, you know, we're all putting all of our energy into supporting Joe Douglas, who the three of us really like. Look how Jamal Adams played yesterday, traded him. Look how Leonard Williams played yesterday. I mean, gave him away. I mean, we're playing both ends of the coin here because we killed Dave Gettleman for giving up draft picks, but they would have released him anyway. If they didn't trade him, they were going to release Leonard Williams. So either Gase or Douglas had no idea the talent that was in front of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you don't sign Jamal Adams, what good players are you keeping?
No,
Jamal Adams still was signed up. He still was on a contract. You make him play. Look how he's playing with Seattle. He was in Colt McCoy's grill all day yesterday.
No, but I think they all recognized the talent. It was a bad situation.
Did they recognize Leonard Williams? I don't think they did,
though. They didn't, man. You know, but that comes down to me, Michael. That comes down to coaching. That he just didn't have the right coaching to bring that out of him. But give the Giants credit, you know. Gettleman could really feel good today. Myself included, bashed him for how long he saw something in Leonard Williams and was able to bring something out of him. Patrick Graham's been able to bring something out of him that Greg Williams has not been able to do. A lot of times it comes down to coaching. Now, I could defend Joe Douglas and say, Mims looks like a legit pick, and they got him in the second round. Right? That turned out to be a good pick. Becton, you know, the Giants could have gotten him, didn't. Maybe he fell to him, but that ended up being the right pick. So we'll see how it works out. Jamal Adams asked to get out. So That was an organizational thing, Michael. Yeah, I think
you know what?
That Joe Douglas knew the talent that he had.
He only asked to get out because they wouldn't pay him.
Right, but you can understand, again, not giving a contract to a safety. It becomes that whole running back situation. It was bad to pick him that high to begin with, and that was a Maccagnan deal. So I think that was an organizational decision. Joe Douglas, his job is to rate talent. And I got to believe he believed that he was a talented player, but then paying him in a cap era, that position, the fact that he was at odds with the coach, wanted out, there's a lot of extenuating circumstances to lead to that trade. It wasn't like Joe Douglas didn't see something and let him go. So I'm not going to kill Joe Douglas for that. And there are a few things that Joe Douglas has done in this draft that were pretty good.
Well, free agent signings weren't good.
Mims has been legit.
His free agent signings weren't good. Everybody brought in to improve the offensive line. The offensive line is not that great. Not that great. Overdid the that's supposed to be his area of expertise. Not that great.
And then and
Perriman, letting go of Robbie Anderson. Not that great.
Right.
Not and that then, great.
Well, yeah, that was a bad one too. But you know, you look at the Giants' offensive line. Look how better it's gotten week after week. Because that was a bunch of no names. That was a situation where it looked awful. See, that's where it comes back down to coaching to me, right? I don't think the Giants, especially on the defensive side of the ball, are exceptionally talented. But this is what good coaching can do. That you can get you have two seventh-round picks at linebacker yesterday flying around the field making plays. Now you know why these coaches don't want to give up late-round picks. Because you know what? If you coach them up, you might be able to get something out of them, right? And that's not happening here with the Jets. So we can kill Joe Douglas. He's sticking around. I think he deserves to stick around. But I think a lot of these guys not accomplishing a lot, they haven't been well coached, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, Leonard Williams was also coached by a defensive head coach, too, and they didn't get anything out of him. He was there with Todd Bowles, too.
That's true. Hey, a lot of guys whiffed on him, Michael. Maybe he was a late bloomer. Maybe just, I don't know what it is, but I tell you what, I did not see him play like that in a green uniform, ever.
No, not even close. Not even close. I mean, he's not Aaron Donald.
No.
But he's playing like an Aaron Donald plays because he's on the inside to sack a quarterback eight times. 8.5 times, I think, he has sacks. From inside the interior, I mean, that's a good player. Yeah, even Bear agrees. 1-800-919-3776. We'll take your phone calls. And then at 4 o'clock, I've got a very, very difficult question to ask Donald.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how he answers it. I frankly don't know how he answers it. But that's all coming up at 4. Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you can hear us on your smart speakers. Just say play the Michael K. Show on ESPN New York. Boom, will pop up. Or you can watch us on Yes most of the times. And listening on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
13 seconds to go. The Raiders have to have a touchdown. They are out of timeout.
And then these guys, they battled the whole game and just got to finish it.
Carr takes the snap. Here comes an all-out blitz.
Is pressure even needed in that situation? All you have to do is stop the play from getting to the end zone. Even a short completion would have been okay.
We had no pressure.
Steps up in the pocket. Unloads one down the left sideline. Looking for Rhodes. Drops it in. Touchdown! Are you kidding me?
I just felt like we could have been a better call at that time from that point of the game.
Sam Darnold unloads one down the right side of the field towards the goal line, and it's knocked away. And that ends the game, and the Jets fall to 0-12, and they lose in as heartbreaking and crushing a fashion as you could possibly imagine.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
I hate to say it because he's got a massive ego, but boy, is Wisconsin good.
I thought the same thing.
Massive ego. You thought that too, right?
And I had the pleasure of hearing it live.
So did he. You know how he feels when he broadcasts. He's nude.
You can feel the nudity.
Oh, he's nude in the press box. Right. I'm sure he is.
If
at least waist down.
I was just going to say, if he made a similar guarantee that Vrabel did, it would be a completely different experience.
Wow.
But we had a little thing for the twins yesterday at my mom's.
The twins' birthday, by the way.
Big.
It was on Saturday, so we had a little function yesterday, and we went and ordered the food. And the timing of the food cannot be worse, because it's like the end of the game, and I'm watching to see what happens, and the pass is incomplete on 4th and 3 with the Raiders. And I'm like, okay, I can listen to the end in my car. You know, the Raiders are going to get the ball back in almost no time, whatever. I can listen to that. And I heard Bob. His call was terrific. Because Bob's in a really tough spot, okay? Because do you realize if that building was full, if there were 80,000 people in that building yesterday, they are cheering for that touchdown like the Jets scored it. Right? Because every Jet fan wants this team to lose. But Bob's got to call it, you know, so he's so professional and sounded so good, but at the same time did accentuate the fact that, come on, are you kidding me? This shouldn't happen. Do you get the embarrassment of it? I understand Jet fans want to lose, but do you understand what you're putting yourself through to get that player? If Lawrence turns out to not work out, Michael, what an absolute disaster, because you can live with the embarrassment of 0-16. You can live with all of the things that have happened to this team if Trevor Lawrence turns out to be the next Peyton Manning. But if he turns out to be the next Colt McCoy, then what are you putting yourself through?
So if he turns out to be the next Peyton Manning, in 25 years he'll call the Jet owner and tell him to hire a completely inept quarterback.
And by then,
if
he ends up being Peyton Manning, I think the Jet fans can live with whatever he does to some other organization. But please, remember this, Jet fans. To me, it's irrelevant what Lawrence is going to be if you don't get the right head coach.
Imagine if they get Trevor Lawrence and they keep this guy. Why hasn't he been fired yet? I was listening to Canty today on the morning show. And, you know, he said, I don't know why he hasn't been fired. Nobody's given me a good reason.
Does it worry you?
It wouldn't be like Darryl Bevell. I mean, they're not good enough to win.
And how much does it worry you, Don, that he supposedly did the firing?
Well, it means he's still got juice.
Because I think he still has that kind of juice. And that's what's, it's got to scare Jet fans. Do I think the percentages are low? Yes, because you guys have made the point that I think they'd storm the castle. It'd be like the end of Frankenstein, right? Chris Johnson will be like somewhere in his penthouse in New York, and people would be with battering rams trying to get to him with pitchforks, and it would just be ridiculous because that kind of PR hit they probably couldn't take. But at the same time, he hasn't been let go. And the argument that I always had was, well, you still have to function as an organization, right? I mean, you still have to go through, and there's nobody, especially with Greg Williams now being fired, that has any experience to be able to do that. But at this point, with 4 games left, you probably want to finish 0-16. But I still think there's the possibility. He's got the Kevorka. He's got the sports Kevorka.
He looks at you with those eyes, and you're done.
Well, you can't. You just need him.
Can't
you
look in those so eyes. All right.
Because think about it. You're Chris John. You're Michael Kay owning the Jets. And Adam Gase goes to you and say, I think we should fire Greg Williams. Aren't you thinking in the back? Well, I should be firing you. Who are you to tell me who should get fired? Sure, Greg Williams should be fired. But who are you to tell me who to fire? You're 0-12.
I might have. If I was Christopher Johnson, I'd go, you know, you're right. And you go, too.
That's the thing. Would it have been the worst day to fire them both?
No, because it's coming off a rancid day. Anyway, I've got that question for Don.
Yes.
So Wayne Gallman had what, 160 yards yesterday? Mm-hmm. And an antique running back that actually was in the same backfield as RG3 when RG3 was good. Alfred Morris had 2 TDs.
Mm.
The Giant running game has been just fine. Just fine. They actually have done a really nice job behind a morphing and amoebic offensive line that's changing all the time. Are you signing Saquon Barkley to a big money deal? Now, you were at the forefront of, why would you take a guy like this with the second pick? We know he's special. We know he's a good guy. We know he's a great face of the Giants. But why would you invest that kind of money when the Rams stand as a perfect Exhibit A?
Yeah.
When they gave Todd Gurley all that money, and that's when the Rams went down. So, are you giving Saquon Barkley a huge contract?
No.
When it's been proven that Wayne Gallman could do just as good a job behind a good offensive line that opens up holes? Are you just going to let him go, Don?
It's a really difficult spot, Michael, but
I know.
How are you paying him when you're going to have to pay Williams? If he continues to be a beast, you're going to have to pay Williams. You're eventually going to probably have to pay your quarterback. If he turns out to be the guy, I got to pay my quarterback. All right?
And look at all the money the Dallas Cowboys are giving Ezekiel Elliott. They stink. What does it mean? They stink. That's money you can't spend on other positions.
Wayne Gallman
is not making money.
They're showing the highlights of Gallman. And Peter, you watch the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is not just him running through holes. Yes, holes are being created, but you see... like, good decisions at the line. You know, he's not dancing back there. He hits the hole. He makes moves. He goes against the grain. He really looks like a really good running back, not just somebody that's running through a semi-truck hole that anybody could run through. I mean, he's really turned out to be a good quarterback, but it really comes down to having good offensive line. Good running back, excuse me. And do I think that Barkley, maybe instead of 135 yards from Gallman, he rushes for 200? I mean, yeah, because I think he's a singular talent. But how do I invest that money when there's guys that have to be paid that are playing way more important positions? And you see the history. The Rams gave Gurley the money. Now he's playing. He's not even on the team anymore. I don't know what you do, Michael. He's such a good kid, and he's such a talented player. And I'm not going to say that this all happened because he got hurt, because that's not true. I think he would have been excelling in this situation. But when you see what guys that you didn't invest the second overall pick, guys that are not going to command a lot of money can do in this offense, why am I going to pay all this money to Barkley? What, to justify the fact that I took him with the second overall pick? It can compound the situation if I end up getting into a debate with my quarterback, if I end up losing Leonard Williams because I can't pay him, and some of these other defenders, because if this defense keeps playing the way it's playing, Michael, some of those guys are going to want to get paid too.
Humor me, Don.
Yes.
Humor me, will you? Close your eyes and imagine this for me, if you will. And know that I hate agreeing with you, because you, Michael, Don was so incessant on his take about Saquon being the wrong pick because of the running. So I wanted him to be wrong. He's not wrong. And now humor me. What can you picture in a fantasy world, in the next year or two, the Giants make their return to greatness with a stout defense, a solid young quarterback, a nice little receiver core, an improved Evan Ingram, let's fantasize. Do you picture it more with Saquon Barkley or with Gallman and Morris? The truth is, when you think about the history of this football team, when they've been good, I picture Gallman and Morris in the Super Bowl. I picture this sort of random combo of running backs being what works for them. And Saquon is such a great kid, and he deserves to get paid, and he is a singular talent. But when you think about this team being good, New York Giants football, Don, this kind of looks like what it looks like.
It's so true, right? Because it's Jacobs, it's Bradshaw. You go back to Joe Morris. I mean, they were good. They were good running backs. O.J. Anderson, who was at the end of his career.
Yeah, where were the stars on the Patriots during the Super Bowl years? Where were the star running backs that got paid all that money? Tell me the team that had a guy making close to max money in the backfield. And one other thing about Saquon Barkley. Singular talent running ball, though he bounces around back out there and tries to hit a home run every single time. He doesn't block. He's a bad blocker.
Yeah.
Are you going to give him $20 million a year? I hate to see it because, as Peter said, I mean, we have hearts here. We're not just looking at it in a black and white way. He's a good guy, and he's a guy that you would want leading and being the front man for your team. But unfortunately, this is a league with a hard cap. You've got to allocate money. I'm not allocating that sort of money. And what Don's argument was initially, even if he's everything in a slice of bread, in 5 years you're going to have to pay him if you're taking him with the second pick.
Right.
And now, will the Giants actually step back and go, we made a bad move, and we're not going to pay him, and we wasted the second pick in the draft? It's a hard call.
But again, you don't do these things in a vacuum. You can compound a problem by giving him the money, and now you come up short in other places. Because having the best running back in football is nice, and Tennessee's been able to make it work for them. But in most cases, it's not where you need to be great. And if the Giants' offensive line blocks the way it's supposed to, and Daniel Jones turns out to be the guy, and this defense turns out to be a beast, I can find a back.
Yep.
They could take advantage of that without having to pay him. So what will end up happening is I'll replace Barkley. Yeah, Peter, by the time they get there, it probably won't be Alfred Morris. Goldman might be there. It might be Lewis. It might be just somebody that right now they'll end up drafting in the fifth round and become a 1,200-yard rusher. I mean, that's kind of the way this league is right now. So that's why you do not take them with the second overall pick. That's why you don't take a safety in the top 10 like the Jets did. Now, the good news for the Giants, Saquon's not going to take Jamal Adams' route. I mean, he's not that kind of guy. I don't think he's going to call the organization out, rip the coach. He's going to be a really good soldier and play hard for this team and not be a disruption or a cancer in the room, but they're going to have to make a decision, and it's going to be tough to let him go, Michael, but justifying the second overall pick, how does that help your team moving forward if other guys that are playing way more important positions end up walking because you can't afford to pay him?
Now tell me, I mean, remember when Gettleman drafted him, he said he drafted him because he was a gold jacket guy, gold jacket Canton, which is what Judge is going to wear one day. But how many gold jacket running backs have been on Super Bowl teams? Walter Payton.
Right. One towards the end of his career.
And right, he was toward the end. So that team won because of defense. So who exactly is a gold jacket running back that's won a Super Bowl? Dickerson never did.
Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt
Smith, who, by the way, had a Hall of Fame quarterback, Pro Bowls.
Hall of Fame wide receiver.
All over the offensive line. A Hall of Fame wide receiver. In my eyes, you know, Novacek is a Hall of Fame tight end. Great defense and a Hall of Fame coach, all right? And also, that was 20-some-odd years ago where the running back position still had major value. But now, who is it, Michael?
No, I can't. I mean, the Patriots never had one, so that's six Super Bowls right there. So where's the gold jacket guy that wins the Super Bowl? And it just becomes a matter of finances. If this was not a cap sport, yeah, you want great players all over, but now you have to pick and choose where you're going to pay the most money. And if you're going to pay the money to Saquon, then you can't pay somebody else.
And I think this helps Gettleman get up from this, because I've had this take from the very beginning, and I could be dead wrong about it, and there'd be people in the organization have denied this. I still believe Gettleman was forced to take Barkley because it was going to help Eli make a run before his career was over. I think if they knew that they were going to finish whatever they ended up finishing that year, 3-13 and missing the playoffs, they wouldn't have picked him. Because I think even Gettleman knew that long-term this was not an answer. But this was the perfect guy to help Eli along, and it didn't work. And now you got to move on. Stinks. But now I just... Michael, this you just don't do it. You know, there's certain positions you do not take. I don't care how good they are. There's no way you can defend that pick now. You can't. And the other argument was, well, he's great out of the backfield. All right, but He is very good out of the backfield. But you know what? I've got other weapons. I can't pay that much money. And nobody else is going to pay him that either.
A friend of mine just said Terrell Davis, again, a long time ago.
Again, that's 20-something years ago.
And some question whether he should be in Canton.
Well, he played 7 years.
Right.
I mean, that's the other thing, too, is they were able to squeeze a couple of championships out of him, and he was the missing link for Elway to get those championships 20-something years ago. That was 90, 97 and 98? So it's over 20 years ago. And
the way the game is played now, it's not a running back game.
Well, look at the guys that have excelled, and where have they been picked? Where was Kamara taken?
Kamara was not
third round?
Yeah, he was not a high draft pick. Now, we opened the show with this, and we'll revisit because the first segment didn't happen to be on yet, so we'd like to serve the television audience as well. The Jets with an awful loss yesterday, and the thing that I take offense to, and Peter kind of disagreed with me, the fans out there that said, well, that was a clearly tanked defensive call. And I don't understand how you think that when Greg Williams knows he's not going to be here. Now he's not here today, but he knew he was not going to be here next year. The coaching staff, in all likelihood, is not going to be here next year. Why is he helping them tank for Trevor Lawrence? If he ever gets another job, he's going to have to be planning against Trevor Lawrence. Why is he helping them tank for him? I just think that that's who he is. He is a gambling type of guy, puts a lot of pressure, brings pressure, wants to be that real flamboyant defensive coordinator. Bottom line, he didn't do that on purpose to, like, throw the game. He thought that that was the best way to flex. And you know what? Got embarrassed and lost his job because of it.
But, Michael, that's why he had to get fired. How do you do that? I mean,
it's inconceivable.
There's 5 seconds left after the touchdown, so there's two plays.
And if he did it on purpose, then they couldn't have fired him.
Now,
right?
Does
there's no way they would have fired him.
Mm-mm.
He was just following orders.
Right, that's why it's a ridiculous take, Peter, to say that the Jets were tanking, because then that would be under the assumption that everybody was going to come back. Why would Greg Williams do a favor for
an organization? My only argument with Michael is that it was such an asinine, crazy thing that in the moment, as a shocked fan, I do not begrudge anyone who thought, oh, well, it must be that they're tanking.
Well, let me say this to you then. Then they haven't been paying attention. Because whatever sport it is, whether it's the 62 Mets, right, whether it's the 76 Buccaneers, what was that Dallas Mavericks team in the late 80s, early 90s that won like 8 games? It was like, there's always those awful teams, right? And especially with the Buccaneers and with the Mets, there are so many plays. You could write books on how bad the team was. Like these unbelievable, these fumbleias in the Buccaneers. You know, the Mets with just how ridiculously awful they were and the errors and the terrible play. That's the level this Jet team is at. When you're going to go 0-16, Peter, that's the way you lose a game that you're supposed to win. Because you stink. Do you think that we're exaggerating when we say they're the worst coached team in football? Am I exaggerating when I say he might be the worst coach I've ever seen in my life of watching football? So if he is that bad, and we're not exaggerating, isn't that what happens to coaches who are that bad? Teams that are that bad? Isn't that the way they lose?
To have it be a play that has never, in 250 similar situations, never been called from a veteran, whether or not he's a risk taker and aggressive or not, even he has never made that call before. So I understand why you're trying to make sense of it. What crossed my mind when the Raiders had the ball late was, do you remember the play, guys? I guess it was the drive before that when I thought the Raiders were going to win the game. When May got tripped up and they called a pass interference? Like legs, it was like, yes. It looked like a leg trip. I almost thought that was the tank. Like, oh, they're going to get out of the game. Oh, they give them a pass interference. Like, I was looking for the tank because, to me, the thought process would be you got something great from Darnold. He showed that he had a tough day, 3 possessions in a row with turnovers, but he came back late, got a 28-24 lead. You could feel good about that. Now just lose the game. But I don't think that's true. I think they just lost. But I'm just saying I understand the fans trying to process it and going, how on God's name could you leave a rookie corner, Lamar Jackson, on an island like that?
There are people that I respect, Peter, in the business that text me and have the opinion that they were tanking. Like, it's not just fans.
Right.
Players, there's no need. There's no reason for a player to tank. There's no reason for Sam Darnold to lose on purpose. He's going to lose his job. Right. He might lose his career. Players don't tank. The only person that would tank could be the head coach by the personnel that he puts out there. And the only reason he would tank is if he's told he's coming back.
Right. That would be it. But for Greg Williams to do that, I think, you know what I think happened, Peter, after thinking about it? Michael won't get this analogy because he doesn't play video games. But you know when you're playing Madden? And you don't really care about the result. You just want to try stuff. Like, you'll try some kind of wacky play. It doesn't matter. It's a video game. You're playing the computer. It doesn't matter. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to go to bed. I'm just going to try something stupid to see what happens. Was it just that? Like, he knows he's getting fired at the end of the year. So he's like, oh, you know what? Let's just try this. Who cares?
But now there's people talking about he'll never get a job again off a call like this. Now, Chris Long tweeted out yesterday, dude, the call was awful, but what coordinator tanks for a team that's probably cleaning house at the end of the year? That take is so surface level. Scott Van Pelt said, if you're going to tank, you don't compete for 59 minutes and 47 seconds.
That part I disagree with.
I mean, what if the wide receiver dropped the ball? So you blew the tank? Because you waited till the last 5 seconds?
Listen, it's all doesn't matter. He got fired. All right. So obviously he was not tanking because he got fired. So there was not done on purpose. But I started thinking
about this. What if he wanted out, though?
But that's still a stain on your resume. You're the guy that did that. Now, what are you going to go tell everybody that you didn't care? I mean, he's 59 years old. He's still young enough to be able to get another job, but it's not like he isn't tainted already by the Bounty Gate scandal. You know, he didn't need anything else negative on his resume. It might end up costing him at the end of the year.
A couple of other running backs, people talking about Jerome Bettis, Marshall Faulk. But again, these are all a long time ago. The game has changed, everybody.
But, you know, Marshall Faulk was also on the greatest show on turf. It was a tremendous team. And again, that was still going back a long time ago.
And then William Greason said, Corey Dillon established early pats. Yeah, but he didn't get paid max money, which is what you're going to have to pay to get Barkley because he was a number two pick. Jamal Lewis with the Ravens. Same deal.
Corey Dillon and Saquon Barkley is apples and wrenches.
Don't misunderstand.
Oh, I love when you use my stuff.
You got to run the ball. I'm not saying that running the ball isn't important. I'm just saying, do you use the draft collateral of a second overall pick? Do you pay big money to that position when your offense functions in this day and age? I can get a guy for a quarter of the price, pick him in the third or fourth round, and do similar things. Yeah, the guy won't go to the Hall of Fame, but I'm looking to win games. I don't care. Do you think as a Giant fan or as a Giant organization that you collect greatness by how many players go to the Hall of Fame representing your team or how many championships you win? Like, any Giant fan loves Saquon Barkley, but if I've got a chance to win a couple of Super Bowls with a no-name or be on a bunch of 6-10 seasons and have him go to the Hall of Fame, I'm sorry, I'll take the bunch of nobodies and win a couple of Super Bowls. No offense to Barkley. It'd be great that he go to the Hall of Fame. I'd be cheering him on if he did. But isn't it about winning championships? Now, how do you do that allocating $20 million to a running back?
You can't. I've yet to see it happen. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Something happened over the weekend that has changed my opinion on Steve Cohen, the Mets' new owner. I'll tell you what that is.
And by the way, I have no idea what this is, but Don, I bet I know what it is.
I bet you don't.
I'm not
really
sure.
It's unrelated to anything public?
Public.
Well, tell me.
I'll throw it out here. I think you've been hyping Steve Cohen up and loving his real talk.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been a little bit of a chatty patty, and it was going to come crashing down at some point because he's doing too much.
Not it.
Wow.
No. Nope. You're an idiot. Your sister smells, and she's ugly.
Strong. That's you don't have to respond
it.
That
That's
harshly.
Not it at all. And you don't have a sister, so that doesn't apply to you. 1-800-919-3776. It's a small thing, but I think it has huge ramifications. And also, I think it puts a little bit of cold water on the dreams of Met fans. Just a little Ooh. Bit. A little bit.
I'm in the dark on this, Peter, so.
All right.
Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you. Just go to the smart speaker and say, play ESPN New York, you'll hear us. Or you can watch us on Yes and Listen on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of
ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so a big Jet loss, a big Giant win. Both fan bases thrilled. Jet fan bases probably felt a little sick to their stomach, but big overview, it's better for them if they go 0-16 and they can decide what they want to do. All right, so here's a quick aside about the Mets. So there were a lot of reports over the weekend that the Mets are leaning toward going after James McCann, the catcher with the White Sox. Now, remember, he was a backup catcher with the White Sox. He played a lot, but Yasmani Grandal was the catcher. But he played a lot, and his numbers the last 2 years have been very, very good, much better than they were when he was at the Tigers. And he's probably going to get, I don't know, they're talking about a 4-year, $36 million deal. And then some people are saying his statistics are comparable to JT Realmuto when you consider how much money JT Realmuto is going to get. But here's my point, Don and Peter. No matter how you slice it, no matter how you parse the numbers, JT Realmuto is a better player. He has a longer history. He's a better player than James McCann. Not saying James McCann's a bad player, but as Sandy said, but Steve Cohen did warn us, I'm not going to spend like a drunken sailor. This to me is proof positive that he's not. Because if you're going to shop in the gourmet aisle, you're going to buy the best stuff in the gourmet aisle. And the best stuff in the gourmet aisle of catchers is JT Realmuto. Damn the cost. But what they're doing, and I think it's smart, I'm not criticizing them, is they're saying, okay, if we want to get George Springer, and if we want to get Trevor Bauer, we can't spend $20 million a year on a catcher. This shows you, Don, that they have a payroll. That they're not just going to say, okay, our payroll is going to be $400 million, and we're just going to go out and get whatever we want. And Sandy has come out and said, we're not making trades because we don't have enough young draft we don't have enough capital in our farm system. So if we're going to improve this year, we're going to have to use it with money. And I get it. I understand. But if you are going after the best players, you check off Realmuto, you check off Springer, you check off Bauer, and not care about the cost. So my point is this, and I wonder if you thought this as well. Well, if they're going to go for James McCann and they're trying to save money there so they could go out and get Trevor Bauer or George Springer. That's the way I look at it. It's responsible. But Met fans that thought he's going to go out and get the best players no matter what, no, that's not the way he's going to operate. And I think that Sandy is probably going to be a little bit of a guardrail for him.
And I'm fine with that.
So am I.
I'm not going to be critical of him because I do think that you want to be responsible. Not because you want to keep the other owners off your back, but you do realize this is a business and you don't want to have a $400 million payroll. I mean, I think Sandy's probably smart to maybe steer him to, hey, Realmuto is a really good player. He's 29 years old, but spending that much money on a catcher doesn't make a lot of sense when there's other big fish that we want to be able to land in free agency, not just this year, but in the future.
And if it was if money didn't matter, right, you just go after Realmuto.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody really think that money wasn't going to matter?
Well, because he's so wealthy. I guess that was the dream.
Yeah, but still, I mean, even when I understand George, he didn't care, right? He wanted to have a Hall of Famer at every single position. Never mind an all-star. He wanted a Hall of Famer. But I think in the real world is that you could still win without having a $400 million payroll, that you could still be responsible. You could be fiscally responsible. Just because he happens to sit on billions of dollars doesn't mean he wants to throw money in the oven. And maybe he feels that if I'm going to spend that much money on a catcher and I'm going to spend all this other money in other places, well, then this is going to be a lost leader for me because I don't know when we're going to start making money. He doesn't know if there's going to be any fans at Citi Field to start the season this year. So I can't kill the guy for trying to be a little responsible and trying to see if he can't you know, have some sort of a budget. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I'm certainly not going to kill him for having some sort of a budget.
He shouldn't be killed, but it was a clear illumination. If you're just going to shop for gourmet items, you need to get the best stuff, and he's not getting the best one. You could try to make the comparison between McCann and Real Muto, but McCann is a level below.
And how old is McCann?
I think he's 28.
So there's really no difference in age.
Right.
But it's also having a baseball person like Sandy, like, look into the future. Like, what if he believes that McCann in a couple of years will be a better player than Real Muto? What if he sees
Could
something
be.
In him that says, you know what, I think he might actually put us in a position we'll be a better team. I don't know. But I am certainly not going to sit here and kill him because he's not going to go out and get every, you know, pay $20 million for every position that's available.
But you would agree that there are some Jet fans that thought that was going to be the case. Met fans, I mean. They thought that he was just going to go and get everybody, and I don't think that's the way. He's not going to operate that way.
No, and he said it in his opening press conference. I'm not going to spend like a drunken sailor.
And do drunken sailors have a lot of money that they just throw around, Peter? I mean,
no.
No,
I've always
heard that money expression. The money they do have, they're so loose with it.
Yes. So it's really not about
that.
How much money they have. It's that what they do have.
They just throw it away.
Goes into wine, women, and song.
Hmm. So jukeboxes.
Or R.J. Bell picks, which would be unfortunate, but now much better.
No, two in a row. Now, I've got some Yankee stuff.
Here we go.
All right, so their number one priority. The organization wants to sign D.J. LeMahieu. Now, can I sit here and tell you that it's whatever cost, however many years? No, I can't. But that is what they want. And everything else is going to play off of that. And from what I've heard, if they get LeMahieu, it's going to cost money. That might be the last big guy they get. So if everybody thinks it's a fait accompli that Tanaka's coming back, I would really, really not hold my breath. There's a chance he might not come back because of the pitching market now, where a guy like Drew Smyly gets $11 million. Well, Tanaka's probably going to get much more than that. Now, is he going to get the 23 from last year? No. But the Yankees are determined to get under the luxury cap, which is 210. So if they get LeMahieu, who's going to cost about 20, the days of Tanaka could be over, and the Yankees will go with their young pitchers, or if they could get somebody on a bargain basement deal with all the free agents out there. So, yeah. For all Yankee fans that are worried about LeMahieu, the Yankees have essentially said, listen, we want you, but if there's going to be somebody out there, this is not what they said, but if there's going to be somebody out there that blows them out of the water, the Yankees are not going to be irresponsible and just match the offer, although they really do want him and they realize how great he is. But if they get him, I think Tanaka's gone. That's just my guess. That's not what anybody's telling me, because I don't think the money's going to be there to get Tanaka. Now, you could scream and yell all you want. Well, the Yankees, why should money? Well, the Yankees lost a lot of money, like every single team in baseball, and you could already see some of the moves that are being made. Ray Selig, the kid closer from the Reds, Ray Sell, traded to the Angels for nothing. Iglesias, the shortstop from the Orioles, traded to the Angels for nothing just because they wanted to dump salary. There are teams that are in legitimate financial straits. It's so weird that I think Buster Only reported that the Phillies would listen to offers on Zach Wheeler, and that's so got the Philly fans angered that John Middleton, the owner, said, we are absolutely not going to trade him, which is ridiculous to say that, because they might not even be able to bring back Real Muto. It's amazing. They lost. I used to think the Phillies like threw around money because they were one of the big market teams, right? They lost $100 million like the roof is caving in. And if you're Bryce Harper, Don, all the promises they made, if you're Joe Girardi, you took that job thinking, you know what, we're going to have top quality players here. They're not spending a dime. If anything, they're going to cut salary. So if people don't think it's real with the money situation, and on top of the fact, we don't know when the season's going to start.
Nope.
We don't know how long it's going to be. We don't know when fans are going to be back in the stands. So they have no idea what the payroll and the profit margin or loss is going to be in 2021. So they're moving very slowly. This is when the winter meetings would be right now, Don. There's a virtual winter meetings going on.
No, this is going to be very interesting to see what happens with spring training. Will they be able to start it on time? Will the season start on time? I would venture a guess that, you know, the season's supposed to start in late March, right? I don't think we'll be having fans in the stands. It's probably going to look eerily similar to what's happening in the NFL, where some cities will have a handful of fans in there and some won't. I don't.
I read in The Athletic, Don, that the thing about, I mean, the best time to start the season would be Memorial Day. So that means the first 2 months of the season would not happen if it continues to go like this.
Which means you're going to shorten the season.
Right.
You have to. Because yep. you're not going to be able to finish the 162 games without bubbling, you know, sometime at the end of when the season is going to be.
Probably be a 100 game season.
Right. It's going to be, which is better than last year, you know. But right. Think about the financial hurting that'll, because a lot of these networks are going to be, wait a minute, I'm paying the broadcast 135 games, not, you know, 75 games or 80 games, depending on how many games are going to be on national television or elsewhere. So money's going to be lost. There's going to be so much money that's going to be lost, Michael, that, and it keeps changing all the time. Like, right now, the NHL is in a really bad place because it sounds like the owners, they're claiming they're not renegotiating because there was a memorandum of understanding that they were going to move in a certain way. Because I think everybody really thought, Michael, back in the day, that by the time we got to close to the first of the year, that things would be better. And now they've gotten worse.
They've gotten worse.
And that's a bad job by them, because the people that thought things were going to get better, that was pie in the sky. I think we all kind of felt that there was going to be a second wave here. But I don't know whether they got inside information that they were going to have a vaccine. If you remember, Scott Boras came on our air and thought that we'd have a vaccine in September.
Yes, he did.
You know, and he ended up being wrong by 3 months, by 4 months, depending on when we get the vaccination. So now it's going to spill deep into the 2021 year, where we're going to baseball is going to be in a kind of a similar place it was when it tried to start last year. That's scary. And then the economy is going to be a mess. So nobody's going to cry for these billionaires, but you know that they're going to work on a budget. Most companies, Michael, work on, I want my baseball to handle its own financially. A lot of these owners don't want to dig into their stock and their other things and pay for the baseball or the sports. They want the sports to be able to float on their own. How do you do that with the economy the way that it is?
And one quick thing to baseball, if I could give you a little advice, you're being infantile with the DH in the National League. They're using that as a negotiating ploy to get more playoff rounds or to get more teams to make the playoffs. And the players are saying, that's not worth giving more playoff teams, just that you give us a DH. And for the union, you're losing 15 big money jobs. And guys like Nelson Cruz are probably going, whoa, come on, Marcelo Ozuna, what are you doing?
It's so unfair.
And they still haven't decided what the roster size is going to be, and the Rule 5 draft is on Thursday. It's so bass-ackwards. They are working to systematically destroy what the game's about. You expect National League GMs to build their team, and they don't even know if there's going to be a DH? Come on.
So they could. So literally, they can sign a player to be their DH,
and then
just betting
DH.
That there's going to be a DH, and then there isn't one, and then what do you do? Are they going to allow you to go back and change the deal?
No, you have an expensive pinch hitter. All right, we'll come back. We'll take more phone calls. We've got Steve Young at 5, Sam Darnold at 5:30, ENN at 6. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.